This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Roundtable. We normally don't keep track of the numbers, but it's a big one. The podcast is now as old as I am. It is 40. I am with Oliver Court, who is much younger.
Hello, I'm not even 21 yet. No. But Tyler Bate is still younger than me, so can't even brag about that.
And Dan Maloney.
The things he's seen.
Yeah, have you seen the things that Dan Maloney's seen, or just like less things?
I definitely haven't. I'm not a wrestler, so I haven't ever been stabbed or mugged on the streets.
The rough streets of the UK,
yeah,
as Nigel McGuinness would have it. I don't think that rough. I think he's just playing it up for effect in front of his American buddies. He's like, oh yeah, we're all toughening and we get mugged all the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's doing the mugging. Do you think he's doing all the mugging? Like, it's just Nigel kind of wandering around the streets of Wolverhampton for Tyler, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
He got thrown into a canal by Tyler Bate, and he's just for a story. That's reported. Well,
they all had to get mugged for that tournament. It was in their contracts.
Were the ones who weren't mugged, were they the ones that went out in the first round?
Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, Tucker... Yeah, he doesn't look like a guy who's ever been
Tucker's
mugged.
Tucker's never been mugged. Never been mugged in his life.
Joe Connors, though.
Joe Connors was mugged, definitely mugged, and stabbed, and all sorts. He's getting the Tanahashi push.
Yeah.
So, 40. We're going to start off by talking about OTT, because they had a couple of shows recently. We were then going to talk about Fight Club Pro, but we can't, because the VOD hasn't dropped. Well, I suppose we could talk about it, because I've seen it, but then you'd just be kind of nodding.
Yeah, I would just be agreeing with you.
So instead, we're going to talk about their Easter shows, because they've signed ridiculous talent for it. We're also going to have a quick chat about What Culture, because they've announced something quite big. And Lucha Forever, because we haven't talked about them at all. And finally, we're going to get around to Zack Sabre Jr. and his signing for New Japan, which apparently Rob said he knew that a year ago.
I don't know if that was just coincidence or if he has clairvoyancy.
I think he was tipped off to it happening.
Or that he has a good source.
Think he was tipped off last year that it was happening, and then he was kind of sitting on, you know, twiddling his thumbs going, well, is it going to happen? So, yeah, it's happened. The first OTT show from February was the one in Dublin at the Tivoli. Mm-hmm. I found out Bo's Johnny lives 5 minutes' walk from the Tivoli Theatre.
That's a good arrangement.
It's some kind of conspiracy. Everyone lives really close to a venue, apart from me. The only venue I'm close to is
money on travel.
Yeah, the only venue I'm close to is Rubery, and that's where what's the name of the promotion? Kamikaze Pro. They run their like trainee show there.
Okay,
and I can't imagine that A, it's a good show, and B, that the venue is anything other than a shitty social club.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to go to it. But that's the closest I've got. Are you really close to any venues?
Well, I'm two train stops away from another Kamikaze venue. And about 40 minutes walk away from Progress Birmingham venue.
Yeah, that's a lot nearer.
Yeah. Other than that, not really, no.
Yeah, you're still closer to O2 Academy than I am to anything. Anyway, sorry, digressed again. So Martina's Gaff Party 2. This is confusing me because it was Gaff Party 2 and then it was also Gaff Party 2 in Belfast. So shouldn't that have been Gaff Party 3?
It should have been Gaff Party 3, but Martina can't count. So, I'm stereotyping. Maybe she can. I don't know.
I really don't know. My only experience with the Martina as a talent so far when seeing her live was she came to Fight Club Pro. So we are talking about it. She came to Fight Club Pro and she was supposed to be hanging around by the bar. That was like her gig for the evening. And she turned up, danced around the ring, and then went behind the merch area. And I saw her there for like the first match and then she disappeared. That was the end of that.
that is a bizarre appearance.
That was my sole experience of Martina so far.
What do you think of the Session Moth?
I like the gimmick. She's getting better as a worker. I think the because they kicked off this show with Martina and Ginny.
Yeah.
And we've been saying how good Ginny's been getting for about the last year. It's been like every time we talked about her, it's been she's getting really good. Mm-hmm. And then the next time it's like, no, really, she's getting really good. And I think this is another fine example of it because this is probably the best Martina match I've seen. And I think it was largely down to the work that Ginny did in that match. Like I'll tell you what the most recent improvement that's come from her is her strikes have started to look really good. I don't know if you saw the knee strike she did in the corner.
Yeah. Like she has that running knee deal, which is sort of like a standing meteora. And that looks really good.
Yeah. So she's been working on that like aspect of her game, but also the other thing that really caught me about this match is the mat work that she's doing at the moment really really strong.
Yeah, definitely.
So she obviously heard that we called her the most improved wrestler in the in BritWrest over the past Eurograps over the past year. And she's going for it again this year because over the first couple of appearances I've seen her in, she's looked really, really good, like even better than before. Didn't really say a lot about Martina there, did I?
Yeah, we managed to turn conversation about Martina into Ginny. But yeah, Ginny was really strong in this match and I'm enjoying Martina's gimmick. She's very endearing and she's got the crowd behind her, definitely.
She did a tarantula in this while drinking Stella.
I really enjoyed that.
And that was fantastic. Then she gave Ginny the old 5% mist. So I think that might actually do some damage to the eyes. That might be a legitimate move.
Oh, definitely.
See, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a bit strange that Ginny won this because it being like Martina's Gaff Party and she came out got abused by what's the dude's name, is it Justin Shape, was it, or one of the other guys? I don't know, there was a lot of talking at the top and I didn't really pay attention.
It was a little bit confusing because we were just like diving back into our DT after a couple of months out and whole heel stable has bloated.
Yeah, he turned Justin Shape turned on the Gymnasties, which was a bit out of left field, but I guess that's one of them shock heel turns. And they had William J. Humperdinck, the son of the owner, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't really that interested in it, so I kind of didn't pay attention, as you can tell.
I mean, we're going to talk about that very problem of not paying attention to that aspect of OTT in after we've run down the shows, so we'll save those takes, I guess.
Let's keep them takes warm.
Keep them in the oven warm.
Yeah, under the grill with the tin foil over the top. I like this match. I thought it was a good opener. Ginny, obviously, really good at the heel work, was really good in the match as well. Second match, we had Justin Shape against Eddie Kingston. Eddie worked like three, it might have even been four promotions when he was over here. But he did a load of UK promotions in a mini tour, including the Fight Club Pro Show that we were going to talk about but can't. He's working face here, but then the Belfast show the next night, he was working heel. And I'm not really sure if he was told to do that or what. It just seemed really odd that he worked face on one show and heel on the other.
Yeah, well, that's because Luke Valentine was Northern Irish, so they wanted him to be the hometown babyface.
Then don't book him against a guy that you booked as face on the show before. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Eddie Kingston seemed very out of place on these shows. Like, you just didn't quite belong with what they were going for. And I'm not really a big fan of the walking brawls. I thought the match with Justin Shape was a lot better than the Luka Valentine one, though.
Yeah,
that was pretty watchable, and that one was bad.
the only good thing about that Luka Valentine match was Eddie Kingston just laid in them chops, really stiff, and that was it. I mean, if you like that kind of thing, then that's a highlight. But this was...
Go watch BJW.
Yeah,
Nova Reborn, where they kill each other.
Yeah. Stiff headbutts. I don't really have a lot to say about this.
No, Eddie Kingston doesn't really do anything for me, and he, like I say, he felt really out of place on these shows.
I kind of like watching him live. Like, when he was in Fight Club Pro, I kind of enjoyed the match from him there. But,
he's visceral, I guess. You could get a reaction live, but on the OD, it just doesn't come across as much.
Yeah, I think he's a lot more fun live than he is on tape. I think on tape you lose a lot of the personality and a lot of the. It's like I said with Trent Seven. It's like when you watch him live, you can hear all the little bits of banter, the quips and stuff, and it's that he's kind of works like that. So you kind of lost stuff by seeing him on tape, but that was my first time watching him live, so I think I've gained an appreciation for his work that I didn't have before, but obviously not from watching this match because it wasn't very good. Excuse me. Speaking of very good, though, the next match was Mark Haskins, his first match back after might have been a career-ending neck injury. We were genuinely concerned that we were never going to see him again. So this was his first match back after, what, 3 months off?
I think about four, actually.
Was it four? It didn't seem like the kind of length of time that we were expecting. I was expecting him to be off injured for a lot longer when he said it was a serious neck problem and his doctors had told him not to wrestle anymore. It kind of felt like, you need to take a lot of time to recoup, to recover that. That said, first match back against Mark Andrews, my God, was this good.
Yeah, no ring rust with Mark Haskins. And this one went a mile a minute, absolutely crazy stuff. My favourite match of the two OTT shows we're going to talk about. It's just really fucking awesome.
Yeah, I got a chance to talk to him after Fight Club Pro, and I said, like, is the neck all right? And he said, yeah, it's fine, but I think I said this on the last show, actually. Did I? Maybe not. Can't remember.
I think so,
But yeah, so he said the neck was all right, but like he didn't know what was going to happen when he got in there and started taking bumps. Yeah. So to watch this match back after having heard him say that, I was looking to see what he was like on taking a few bumps, but the first couple were a little bit speculative, like he wasn't sure what was going to happen, which is kind of worrying to watch. But then when he's fine, then after that, it's almost perfect. It was just a terrific match. And this is why I was so upset with Mark Haskins getting injured in the first place, because this is what he's capable of.
Yeah, I can't really add much more to it. It was an amazing match. There's not a whole lot of story to talk about, but it was kind of like a PWG exhibition. Just go, 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 do your craziest stuff. And they're both really, really good at that style. So if you want a match, I wouldn't call it a spot fest necessarily, but just really awesome moves, one after the other, with no relenting for like 15 minutes, this is match for you.
Yeah, but it wasn't a spot fest, because it was, I think the transitions in it were really good. The way the action went from like one wrestler being in charge to the other, the way it went from one section of the match to another was entirely believable. Everything made sense, and the conditioning of both of them is just incredible to have this kind of match, especially Haskins having been off for like 3-4 months before this, to come back and have this impressive match as his first match back is just incredible. It really is. So I thought this was fantastic.
Definitely something that everyone should go and watch, I think.
Yeah, if you only watch like one match from the show, of course that'd be stupid, because you have to pay like £8 or whatever it is for the
£5 for renting.
£5 for rental. £8 to buy it, yeah. But if you're going to spend that much money, you might as well watch the whole show.
Yeah,
that would be definitely a match to watch, because it's fantastic. I talked a couple of people into buying the show just based on that match, and I don't think they were disappointed. Before the next match, there was a little segment with the Body Bros, Adam, Max, Ted, and I can't remember who else is in the little group. But there's like
no,
three of them.
It's Adam, Max, Ted, and two other people.
Crowd chanted steroids at them. That about sums up what kind of a worker he is. So they basically, had a go at Martina for being fat, and then Drew Galloway came out there and beat everyone up.
Mm. And then cut the most Drew Galloway promo ever.
I love his promos.
Yeah, I love his promos too, but like it's kind of like a meme now that he always cuts these. I love wrestling. I love indie wrestling promos. Yeah. They're great. It's just this the same promo every time.
It isn't, because like this one had an awful lot of history to it, because I put Drew's promo over in What Culture when he had the neck injury and came back, because he talked about like his history then, but it was specifically about like being helpless because of the neck problem. Mm. Whereas this was all about his history with Irish wrestling and how it went back to Irish Whip, all the stuff with like rooming with Sheamus and the way he kind of tied it all together. That's what a good promo is. You take like two different strands tied together.
Great talker. And that's why he gets to talk so much on indie shows where there aren't a lot of great talkers.
Yeah, I think there is room there for people to cut promos. That doesn't happen at the moment, like pre-record some stuff, just insert it into the show. I think that would a lot of long-term storylines would benefit from just a little bit of a promo here and there.
Yeah.
He's coming back. So he's wrestling their April show. We know this because he pointed at the sign. after that, we had another huge match. Marty Scurll against Matt Riddle. Riddle had originally been booked to wrestle against Pete Dunne, but they couldn't do that for reasons. And Scurll was the replacement. You enjoy this one?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Didn't think it was Matt Riddle's best match in Europe, but yeah, love Matt Riddle. I listen to his theme song every day. Worship at the altar of Riddle. Great chemistry with Scurll. Just a really fun match. Again, they went all out, did a whole load of stuff, and it was really fun. But also, there was that kind of submission element to it, like who was going to tap out to whose move. And in the end, Riddle taps out to Scurll, so Scurll is evidently going to be around a bit more in OTT. I don't think this was just a one-off.
Yeah, I think you would have had him lose if he wasn't going to be hanging around. So, I really enjoyed the storyline in this match, because there was a lot of stuff where, how should I put this? It's like Riddle wasn't affected by stuff that would normally work against anyone, if you know what I mean. It's like Skull's usual ploys seem to work universally against just about everyone, even if it's somebody that he's wrestled loads of times before, he still catches them in certain spots. Whereas in this match, when he called for the chicken wing, it didn't work. When he went for the finger snap, it didn't work.
And he got toe snapped instead.
Toe snapped, yeah. So Skill had to change his game, and it actually, seeing Marty forced out of his comfort zone like that was actually quite refreshing, because he has been kind of sticking to his own his own stereotypes and his own moves for quite some time, and just to see him be forced out of that zone and to see those moves changed around was really refreshing.
Definitely.
And that's what Riddle's all about. He's about shaking things up and just being different. That rolling gut wrench suplex is that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. That kind of power and grit to do that is pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's just insane. It was kind of tough for them to follow on from, because the two segments before was that great Haskins Andrews match, which I assume OTT didn't realize it was going to be that good. Otherwise, it probably would have been in a different spot. And the Drew Galloway surprise, to have to follow those two and then come up with this match. It's a tough spot for them. This could have fallen on its face at some point, but I thought they did a really good job. And another good promo, I thought, Marty's post-match, where he talks about how it took him 12 years to get this good and be recognised as a star on the world stage, and Riddle's got there in two. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really good promo.
That was lovely. Lovely little shout-out to the best import forever.
Mm. Well, since Hero, since AJ. So, import of the year then, Matt Riddle. It's a bit early to be crowning an award, but he's had a good couple of months. Next match on the show, we had Irish Jordan Devlin, the shit Finn Balor, against Canadian Speedball Mike Bailey. I'd actually forgotten Mike Bailey was on this show. That's how stacked it was. It was so loaded up. I've had a couple of issues with Mike regarding selling before, and I'm not one of these guys that just moans about selling all the time and they don't sell properly nowadays. But if you have your leg worked on, you can't really then come back and do a load of knees with it, especially when it's the knee that's been worked over.
Mm. He does that quite a bit, kick with the leg that he's been attacked on.
Kick with the other leg. he did the crane kick from the Karate Kid, which I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
So it's he's finally doing something with the leg. The leg hurts, he can't use it, so he had to do that. And I assume Jordan Devlin hasn't seen The Karate Kid because he fell for it.
I really enjoyed Devlin's heel act. I think he's gotten really good at it.
He's a lot better here.
He is a nasty so-and-so, that boy. You want to see him get beaten up. Because he's just shit Finn Balor, isn't he? He's way too big for his boots, and you want to see his chest get caved in by Mike Bailey's kicks. So yeah, in that regard, this match really worked. I thought the dynamic between them really worked. It wasn't as good as the prior two matches, but it was nearly on the same level.
I think it would have worked. It could have been at that level if they hadn't bothered with the leg, or they'd done the leg work at the end, which is what I said with Bailey against Zack Sabre Jr. I said exactly the same thing, I'm pretty sure, where he'd had the leg worked and then they just forgot about it and went and had a normal match at the end. If they'd just done the leg work at the back end of this, it would have been all right, I think. Because the finish was Bailey missing with the double knees and then getting hit with the package pile driver.
Yeah.
Which happened because he got a bad knee. So it made sense. It just didn't in between. It was ups and downs. But one thing about Devlin is that he is significantly better in OTT than he is outside of OTT.
We saw in Headlock City, WWE.
But I kind of assumed that he was asked to work that way.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were going to go out and showcase yourself, we know he can do better than that. So that was presumably something he was told to do. With Devlin, it'll be interesting to see how he is in progress because he's debuting for them this weekend.
Yeah, and if he has a bad match against Travis Banks, then that's probably not good.
Yeah, no, probably not.
So, yeah, hopefully he can have a good match outside of OTT, like you said. He looked a lot better here than he did in the WWE tournament, so if that's your first experience of him and you're judging him harshly on that, then definitely give this show a shot. And he works a lot better against a big star, well, big indie star like Mike Bailey. Really good match.
Yeah, and then we had they had a quick plug for Scrappermania. So they've got a load of guys on this, like Ospreay, Ryan Smiles on it, Ricochet, the Young Bucks, and Kenny Omega. And I said the other day on the Twitter, do you think like BritRes or the Eurograps or whatever has got like a book discount on Young Bucks and Kenny Omega bookings? Because all of a sudden they're everywhere.
Well, I mean, it's all over one weekend, so I guess they're popping in to say hi.
They're popping all over the place.
Well, yeah, they're going to fly from London to Wolverhampton to Dublin in the space of 3 days. And I'm sure they'll have fun in doing so. Mm-hmm. Oh, and Scotland Discovery. Can't
yes,
forget
yeah,
that.
Yes, yeah, and Discovery against a mystery trio.
So, yeah, they're going everywhere.
I'm kind of pleased that they got the Fight Club Pro booking, because I kind of hadn't booked tickets to Rev Pro, and I was like regretting it afterwards when they actually announced Kenny Omega the morning, sold out in the afternoon, and then I got in from work and I was like, what do you mean they've sold out?
That was pretty crazy. Yeah. When I saw that pop up on my phone, I was like, yeah, gotta get home, because I know they're gonna go.
So you're going to Epic Encounter then?
I am indeed. Okay. I mean, I thought Hiromu would be enough for me, but because I'm now in love with Hiromu. Yeah, once I saw Omega, I knew that I would have to go. And I'm also going to the Tag Team Invitational, the Wolverhampton show.
Yeah, so, the Wolverhampton show. That's going to be good.
Double Elite.
Yeah, I'm going to that show, but I'm not going to Rev Pro. I'll just have to watch that one on VOD. But, of course, they just named, a bit of a tangent, but they just named Hirooki Goto against Zach Gibson.
Did you see Zach Gibson's affiliation, Hirooki Goto of Chaos versus Zach Gibson of Liverpool? I'm sure that doesn't endear you to him.
Not the club, no, not at all. Sorry, I'm aware that we just kind of wandered off on a tangent again there. Yeah. I can't remember what we were talking about. So if we go back to the next match, which was Tyler Bate and Angel Cruz against Paul Tracy and Charlie Sterling. Part of the issue that I feel OTT has, with the exception of Jordan Devlin, is that there is quite a large gap in talent between the imported stars and the Irish talent.
Yeah.
And it's never been more amplified than it is when you've got Tyler Bate tagging with Angel Cruz. It's
a
cute act.
Stark difference.
But yeah, the level of talent between it's a massive gulf.
I feel like Paul Tracy and Luther Ward aren't that far behind either.
I feel like Paul Tracy has been wrestling for a very, very long time.
Yeah. And he's very good on the mic as well.
I once saw Paul Tracy wrestle live in Scotland, and this must have been, I want to say, 2004 or something like that. It was a very long time. He was tagging with Balor at the time, Fergal Devitt, as he was at the time. So he's been around for a long time. He's definitely the Marty Jannetty of that team. It really is.
I could not argue with that.
I mean, no offense, like, you know, Marty was a good wrestler, but yeah, poor Tracy, he's kind of remained in Ireland. And I kind of think he's getting outshone by Charlie Sterling as well.
Well, a little bit. I think their act sort of works with that, though, because he's sort of the boss and sits back while Sterling does all his dirty work but doesn't realize it. So I think that is justified in their act.
Fair enough. Don't really have a lot to say about this because it was kind of a filler match almost.
Comedy filler, really.
Yeah,
Tyler on the show.
That was it. I did pose a question on the Twitter. Why is Tyler Bate not carrying his UK title around? And the response that I got was that he did have the title. It wasn't like it was in a vault in Stamford somewhere. But WWE don't want him to wear it on other people's shows. Which I think is a bit weird. I mean, wouldn't you want that title to be displayed?
I guess because it's a prop that only exists in the WWE universe, so you can't sully it by tarnishing it with indie scum.
I guess so, but that's what's happening. He's not allowed to wear it on indie cards. I thought he would wear it at Fight Club Pro because it was like the first big show he'd done since like in his home after winning the title. I thought it would have been a no-brainer to just kind of come out waving it around, but nope. Oh, well. Speaking of titles, the main event for this show was the OTT No Limits title, Pete Dunne defending against Ryan Smile. Dunne hadn't been beaten for the entire of his run in OTT in singles. So the fact that he lost here, does that suggest to you that he's not going to be in OTT anymore?
I think this weekend was a goodbye. Like, he lost the title to Ryan Smile, who's been built up for it. But then, like, he beats Mark Andrews in the main event of night two, and then does the bowing, does the waving.
Mm.
Like, sort of dropping the act and sort of slapping hands with the fans. Yeah, it seems like this was him on the out in OTT. And, like, who can blame them? Obviously, I compare his and British Strong Style situation right now to Gargano and Ciampa's from a couple of years ago, where they're sort of half signed, but you know that they're going to get signed eventually. So better to wrap it up at a logical place here rather than stretch it to run out to the point where nobody cares about it anymore or knows that he's leaving.
Well, Pete's been over in Ireland making a name for himself for the entire run OTT have had.
Yeah.
And he's done a fantastic job over there.
Well, he's become the Bruiserweight over there. Like, this was when he started on OTT, he was still very much without an identity. Like, I've always thought he was a good wrestler, but never had that look until he started in OTT and did the China tour, and that was the turning point. And he definitely played his trade as the heel champ in OTT and helped get them onto a bigger profile. Like, I think it was like the beginning of 2016 when we first started talking a lot about OTT, and that was just a couple of months into Pete Dunne's first title reign.
Yeah, he definitely got eyes on himself with his performances there. The only problem that they've got here is I don't think this was a logical place to switch the title, and I don't think they'd built Ryan Smile up as a significant person within the company. They didn't heat him up for this title shot. It was just...
Yeah, it was a soft heating up, if anything. Like, he's been put in a lot of big matches. He wore the Irish paint that one time. He's obviously been built up as a star in OTT and, like, important for them. But yeah, there was no build for this. Because he was originally going to face Matt Riddle, was Pete Dunne. So Ryan Smile was a replacement challenger. So it's definitely a rush to the finish of the story. But at the same time, you can't say Ryan Smile was completely out of the blue.
Do you think the original plan was for Dunn to drop the title to Matt Riddle?
Possibly. I'm not sure.
Because if that was the match they were having and they knew Pete Dunne was leaving, was that what they were going to do? Or has Pete's departure been accelerated by the fact that they've not been able to book him against who they wanted?
Do you think Titan Tower's alarm bell rang when they heard that Matt Riddle was going to beat one of their guys?
With Riddle being such a featured player for Flow Slam.
Yeah, and Evolve.
Perhaps that was an issue. I don't know. But they did kick off at something else where Riddle was wrestling somebody on a Flow Slam event. I know OTT were on Flow Slam but now aren't, but Riddle is Mr. Yeah, Flow Slam, really. He's one of their poster boys.
OTT was only one show on Flow Slam, and then they quickly got the word that they probably shouldn't be on Flow Slam,
yeah.
And then didn't continue on. But yeah, I think it was IPW.
Yeah.
Got hit with the Riddle Dunn thing.
Because
well.
Riddle, yeah, he wrestled Ryan Smile on that show, so it's all come full circle. It all makes sense. So yeah, my theory here is that they probably knew Pete wasn't going to be available much longer, wanted him to drop the title, thought it'd be an interesting switch to go with Riddle, seeing as Progress have got him as champion, you know he's going to be over in Europe. And I think WWE kind of said, no, you can't do that.
That's crazy that WWE is booking the indies now.
Well, this is what happens. I mean, that's how they do things. They take over and they're in charge. So it is what it is.
What did you think of the actual match? I realise we haven't
The match was really good. I mean, like the three big matches on this show were all really strong. The only concern for OTT is that you look at those three big matches and they were all import guys. Like none of them were none of the guys that wrestled in those matches were Irish. So that is a worry for them. But they have been using Pete Dunne and Ryan Smile for 3 years, so you could claim it was three guys that they'd built up to a position where this was kind of a match that made sense from the perspective that they... I mean, didn't they wrestle each other like the first show they were there?
Yeah, they were both on the first show and they wrestled each other. So it makes sense that Smile was the guy to definitively beat Dunne. Obviously, Paul Tracy had the title reign in between, but like that wasn't too significant. This has been the Dunne show for a while, so it makes sense to transition it to Smile.
Yeah, even though this made sense from like a booking perspective, do you think the crowd reaction was a little... they're a little underwhelmed by it, maybe?
Oh, there were some murmurings on Twitter, like, of screenshots of people looking perturbed, to say the least, that Ryan Smile won it, and maybe he's not as over as OTT would like him to be, but I thought his post-match promo certainly showed that he can be an impassioned figurehead for the company, like their ace, so to speak.
It's not like he's an ace anywhere else in terms of like the big promotions. I mean, they're using him, but that's about it.
So maybe like his standing in other companies lessens him here. I'm not sure. But yeah, there was certainly an air of, is that it? It wasn't confetti falling from the rafters and everyone giving him a standing ovation. But I did think his post-match promo was really good. And I think he's really fucking good in the ring. So... he should be a good champion. I look forward to having more matches here. I did think it was a missed opportunity for him not to be at Belfast, though. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, that was an issue. But then if that wasn't the plan originally, then that would kind of make sense.
Yeah.
Because if the original plan was for Riddle to win, then they could have done Riddle and Haskins as a title match on the second night. So... that would have made sense, but yeah. The thing with Ryan Smile, I mean, he does say some incredibly stupid things, and he doesn't seem to have any like filter between his brain and his mouth. But when it comes to in ring, like he's fearless and he's exciting, and the matches that he's been having have been genuinely great. It's just, as long as he's got some kind of chemistry with his opponent, then you're guaranteed a good match from him as a main event. So I don't see a problem with it. I don't think OTT are at the stage in their development where they can turn around and say that guy's not good enough to be our champion, because I don't think that's true for starters, and I don't think they're in that position.
I mean, he's an OTT original, so he's part of that promotion. I think he's as worthy a champion as any. Let's see if he gets the crowd reactions that they want him to.
Okay, so moving on. The second show, the following night, which would have been the 5th of February, was in Belfast. Different lineup on this show, some different names involved. First of which would have been Tucker, who I was not very familiar with before his appearance in the WWE's gimmick. He did really good against Tyler Bate in Blackpool. Didn't think he looked as good here, but it was quite good, quite a good opener.
Yeah, decent opener. I thought Charlie Sterling looked better than he did. And Sterling's really good as a heel. I hope, obviously he'll be playing a face against CCK in the RevPro tag title match, but I think he shines as a heel, actually, and this sort of
the thing is he has the moveset of a babyface, because he does an awful lot of flips and standing. There's a lot of flippy dudes.
He has the facial expressions of a heel, I think. Mm. He sort of looks aghast at everything that happens and just angry with the world and his place in it.
he looks like a dickhead, doesn't he?
I
think it's very difficult to replicate that. It's you either have it or you don't.
That's so mean.
that was praise.
Only in wrestling could looking like a dickhead be a positive thing.
it really is. when you're a heel, it's very easy to just go out there and be a generic heel. To add that second layer to it that makes, you don't just hate them because they're the bad guy in the match, you hate them because of what they are, because of who they are.
Yeah.
That's really hard to do. And some people can't do it at all. I imagine, I'm trying to think of a really good example, but say Tucker, his character is very bland, I would say. There's not a lot going on with his character. He's a good wrestler, but then you look at Charlie Sterling and he drove the match because his character is so well defined.
Yeah. Tucker's character was I'm Northern Irish.
That was about it, wasn't it?
he
tries to do no nonsense kind of thing. We're just gonna cut down and wrestle and that's it. So I don't know, I still like him, Tucker. I think he's a really good prospect. But I'm just saying that when you compare the two, Sterling is further along because he's got all that character work and all that.
Sterling's the complete package by this point, I think, whereas Tucker's still putting the pieces together.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. second match on this show.
The best match ever.
this lineup is just strange. For me to read it out, this is strange. It's the lads from the Flats and Martina the Session Moth. So basically a very, very OTT gimmick trios team going up against Paul Tracy, Ginny, and Rene Dupree.
Yes, the original Tyler Bate.
I have
a Rene Dupree fact for you.
Yeah.
I want you to guess how many times in a row did he beat Seiya Sanada, aka Sanada in all caps, in 2013 on a tour of Canada. How many times in a row did he defeat him for the Gaiora TV title?
I have no idea. 8?
It was 24 times across May and June in various locations in Canada. He defeated Seiya Sanada.
I take it it wasn't televised, which kind of...
ironically, yeah.
kind of defies the point of it being a TV title.
Sanada cannot get past Rene Dupree, so maybe he should come to New Japan and finish that feud off.
Yeah, maybe. I thought he looked quite good here. I forget that he was, because he was, 20 when he was in WWE, that he's still actually quite young. He's got to be, 30-something, the early 30s?
32, I think, yeah.
So, I don't think he's picked up an awful lot of seasoning. He's solid, but...
I mean, he looks like a fucking monster.
monster. He's kept the physique. I think the issue with him, and you can see why WWE kind of gave up on him, is he's not really progressed beyond the worker that he was when he left WWE.
he's got muscles and that's it. But sometimes that's all you need.
not anymore, I don't think.
Yeah. I think the world of wrestling has moved on from him and his kind.
I'm afraid so. And he's very young. He was like probably the last... muscle man, wasn't he?
But then again, I think he still has
a movie about him.
I think he still has charisma, certainly. And he beat Sanada 24 times, so he must be a good wrestler.
Well, he can do the French tickler. It's a hell of a dance. I actually thought it was quite a good match. For what it was, I enjoyed Ginny again. The heels healed it up. I think the only problem that they had is, I'm going to have to name names now. What was the, it was Paddy.
Paddy M and Worky.
Worky has got a bit of size about him, but Paddy is just tiny.
Skin and bones.
He looks like you're going to work in men's club and there's always like there's a Paddy in every working man's club. And I don't mean like an Irish person. I mean like a Paddy M, like this skin and bones guy who's drunk Guinness all his life and somehow has not put on any weight. Yeah. I just don't buy into guys of that size wrestling against guys of Rene Dupree's size.
Yeah, and it looked a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense.
I think it was supposed to look ridiculous. So I mean, why else would you book Rene Dupree other than... to get a laugh.
I guess. Best part of the match, Style Clash. Did you hear the pop it got?
Yeah, right. They chanted holy shit move. For it. Ginny's very smart to have picked a gimmick where she can use that move without it feeling like it's move stealing.
It's
not
just theft.
Like it's very natural for her to use that move.
And she hit it on a man as well, so that was kind of... To be fair,
although
Paddy's smaller than Martina by
literally tiny.
I don't really understand how Paddy took all of the heat, got his ass kicked for like 10 minutes, and then he got the pin on Paul Tracy. Like, just get somebody else to win it. Yeah, again, though, I thought Ginny was the star in this.
Yeah, I also thought Paul Tracy's mic work at the beginning was really good.
Yeah, it was good.
Went beyond just running down the crowd for being poor and whatever, but like really like got to the crux of what he was trying to say. Like, he took traditional, normal Northern Ireland sucks heat and made it his own, so that was good.
So it was solid. Wasn't great or anything. Match after that was Tyler Bate and Jordan Devlin. This I thought was a better showing from Devlin, although this is possibly because Tyler can sell. Tyler looked like an absolute star here.
Oh yeah, he's loving life at the moment. He can just wave and get massively over. So yeah, but also a really good match as well. Like he wasn't. Laying it on thin or anything. Like, this was a proper match, much better than the WWE UK Championship match. So,
yeah. Loaded nothing, wasn't it? The UK title tournament match. But this was really good. This is a much better match than that one. partially because of the setting, like with the Tivoli, it's all very tight and enclosed, and you can hear what everybody says. And it's just a fun match and a fun venue. I still think Devlin needs that singles breakout match where he has blowaway match. It hasn't happened for him yet, and this was probably as close as I've seen it. But I'm sure it'll come.
Still questions definitely about his in-ring work, but I think he's certainly getting there. And like you said, he's the best guy OTT have native-wise.
His timing is really good. And if you've got timing, then that's always a good sign that you're going to become really good at everything else. So yeah, that was a very solid match. I enjoyed that. Match after that was the Wards, Luther and company against the Kings of the North. Stop laughing. The Kings of the North, not well liked in Southern Ireland, but liked in Northern Ireland because they're from there.
Yeah.
It's the Hart Foundation all over again.
I like that they have that dynamic. It's fun.
It's very rare that you get that nowadays.
Yeah, usually heels are heels everywhere. Universally. But yeah, I guess Ireland and Northern Ireland have...
It's unique, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm glad
nothing quite like it, I guess.
I'm glad things have settled down to the point where they can actually have a tag team that goes faces
the fact,
one and
the fact that it's all fun and games in wrestling now, and that's as far as it goes, is probably a good thing.
It's a good thing, it is. I remember, because I live quite close to Birmingham, and when I was a kid, they used to bomb pubs in Birmingham because of the troubles in Northern Ireland. Imagine having that, where like you had violence on your very doorstep. It's kind of unthinkable almost. So it's great that times have changed. Very pleased about that.
Talking about anything other than the match, because the match was a whole load of nothing, really.
There was a lot of spots. It was very spotty.
But none of them really landed, I think. Luther Ward is good. The other two Wards, less so.
Do they need to call someone Ward? Like with the Dudleys?
Well, I believe there was Rocky Mack, who's the mustache guy, and Par Ward, who is the guy who looks like a shindy wrestler in 2003.
Yeah, there's room for some creativity there. If they bring somebody in that's good, that sounded like an insult. If they bring somebody in that's like known for another gimmick and put like the Ward name on them, that could be better for the stable. Just for shits and giggles.
I did enjoy the finish and the Kings of the North just beating up on I believe it was Par Ward. But yeah, just kind of destroying him. Like they're a good big boy tag team, I think. It was bizarre that this was a six-man tag match, but also a tag team championship match.
I didn't actually notice until they announced them as the winners and still tag team champions, and I was because they had Duncan Disorderly in there as well on the... that's a great name, that is. OTT are particularly good at gimmicky names with Duncan Disorderly and Just In Shape. I don't think either of them are Marius Van Beethoven, though. That's still the measuring stick for great names in wrestling, in European wrestling. So the next match after that was Mark Haskins and Matt Riddle. Before I saw this, somebody, I forget who, I want to say her name is Ninja Potts on Twitter. I don't actually know what her name is, so I'm going to look it up, because she shared a, her name's Vicky, she's at Ninja Potts on Twitter. She'd shared a, a gif of Matt Riddle doing a tope off the ramp into the ring on Haskins. That is just, for me, that's one of the spots of the year. Absolutely that was a sensation.
That was less a tope and more a torpedo. That was crazy.
The speed he did it at. And then afterwards, after he got the near fall and it wasn't the finish, and like he rolled over and the camera was right down there by him, and you can hear him say, "That was sick."
It's good that he enjoys himself.
Yeah, he was marking out for himself. Bless him. Yeah. Like the Mark Andrews match, this was really, really good. Like, really good. So you had the Haskins has this intensity about him that is just, it defines what he is as a wrestler. I mean, it's not what he's like as a person. As a person, he's just really nice. But when he gets into the wrestling ring, he just has this drive and this intensity, and you can see it on his face. Whereas Riddle, complete opposite, extremely laid back, really relaxed, happy, like just happy to be there kind of thing. Until
always smiling, even when he's getting hit in the face and powerbombing people.
So they had this great opposites attract chemistry thing going on that that really worked for me. The quality of the match was very, very high, and you could see that Riddle was impressed. After the match, when they kind of did like a handshake spot, he didn't even want to know the handshake, went straight in for the hug. He was just like wanting to show Haskins that he thought a lot of him after wrestling him. Obviously, Haskins is getting a lot of opportunities now. Evolve have invited him to come and wrestle for them. When the year started, I didn't know if I was going to see Mark Haskins this year. And I've already seen him wrestle two incredible matches in Ireland. I've seen him wrestle in person. I've had a chat with him. And he's going to be working for Evolve. So he really has turned that around.
It's a very good start to the year. especially considering where he was at going into 2017. This match itself, I didn't think it was quite as good as Haskins versus Andrews.
No, it was a step below.
It didn't quite have the same intensity.
They took a while to click.
Yeah, kind of. It wasn't balls to the wall straight off. And there was a little bit of feeling out going on. Once that torpedo tope hit, though, like, that was when the match went into overdrive.
Yeah, all the stuff down the stretch at the end is great.
I can't argue with that. I think this is probably the second favourite match of the weekend for me. And so Mark Haskins got 1 and 2.
Haskins 1 and 2, yeah.
And like, I think Riddle got 3 and 4. So Haskins and Riddle are very good wrestlers.
Yes. Definitely so. I'd love to see them go again. I think having had that first match, gotten that out of the system, I think a second one would be phenomenal. And I get the feeling down the line we're going to see them wrestle each other in really big matches. And if they can do this on an undercard match, then imagine what a big match is going to look like. Wrestling. The semi-main event was Eddie Kingston against Luther Valentine. The main event was Pete Dunne and Mark Andrews. So Pete had just lost his title the night before, first loss in 3 years. Instead of having him go out on a downer, they had him have like one final match in OTT, and that was Mark Andrews.
Yeah, obviously the guy he knows best.
Yeah. I mean, they've had God knows how many matches. They must have been wrestling each other for their whole careers at this point.
Yeah, I think the WWE match is probably their best one, just because of the stage they were on and like the emotion behind it. This wasn't quite the same, but it was like sort of a best of Pete Dunne hits kind of thing. Like, definitely a great match to send him out on and remember him by an OTT.
Yeah. It's two pretty good matches to go out on. I mean, like the big matches on these two shows, they all landed really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't complain about any of like the big time indie star singles matches on these shows. Like, they were all really good and definitely worth your time. It's only like the gimmicky tag stuff which is maybe flawed.
Yeah. But then I don't think there was anything outstandingly bad. I think probably the worst match was the one I just kind of skipped over.
Yeah, well, we'd already talked about that a little bit.
Kingston and Valentine. And even that had banter. And, potty mouth violence from Eddie Kingston. So even that wasn't a total loss. So even like the downside was okay. So I would definitely recommend these two shows. If you only want to watch one of them, I would probably go with Dublin.
Yeah.
Because that Haskins Andrews match is off the charts. Plus, you still get Dublin. To see Riddle. You still get to see Pete Dunne. You get to see the big title change.
Dublin was the better show, definitely. But Belfast wasn't too bad either. It just kind of relied a bit too much on hometown guys and gimmicky stuff in between the good matches. So, yeah.
I've had it remarked to me that there is an issue with OTT, which is kind of similar to the one that RevPro have got, and that's that they're struggling to develop talent themselves to match the talent that they're bringing in. And I think it's far more pronounced in OTT than it is in RevPro, where they're making a genuine effort to push guys like Dan McGee and Rob Lias, who've only just come into the business.
Well, also RevPro's like pushing of Dave Mastiff and Zach Gibson and like making them different in RevPro than in anywhere else. I think they're doing a much better job of that this year. And the cockpit shows, we've always been praising them, but now I think they're on another level in 2017, like in terms of just building up the characters a bit better than they've ever done before. So I don't know if you can really level that criticism at RevPro right now. But yeah, OTT
If you only watched the big shows, then that would be how you would perceive RevPro. That's my feeling. Yeah. So if you only watch the York Hall shows, then you would see the local guys that they brought through as basically jobbers. They don't really they don't really push them at all on the big shows.
Yeah.
Like Josh Bowden's been around for how long now, and he's just kind of starting to get some traction on the main card. I know he's held the title before, but that's kind of before they started doing super shows constantly.
I definitely know what you mean, yeah.
I think OTT's big problem is they don't run as often as someone like RevPro, and they've gone from running shows that help to build character to doing super shows for every show. And it's kind of marginalized the local talent. They all have like a spot that they're in, and they doesn't feel like there's any advancement out of that. And Devlin just happened to be higher up the card than everyone else when that happened.
I think you could level this criticism at a lot of British indie promotions right now is the inability to mix the indie superstars with the more local guys, because now there are so many UK super indie guys, but they do kind of outshine the guys you've always been booking. So if you want to bring in a Marty Scurll or a Pete Dunne, it does kind of fuck your roster up a little bit.
There are ways and means around this. I think the problem that they've got here is you look at these shows, these two shows in particular, and all the best matches came from imports wrestling other imports, even if they're guys that have worked there for a long time, they're still imports. Whereas the local talent, the likes of, I mean, you look at that first show, who've you got from Ireland in there? You've got Martina, you've got Justin Shape, Devlin, Angel Cruz, Paul Tracy, and that's it. Two of those guys in a tag where they were outshone by their tag team partners, who are not Irish. Devlin, obviously, is Devlin, that's fine. Justin Shape basically got crushed by Eddie Kingston, and Martina lost to Ginny and looked handily outperformed in the process. So there's definitely an issue there, but how do you fix it?
Do OTT have a training school? I've never really heard of it.
I'm not sure if they do or not. I'm not sure if they do, and I think that might be the problem. If they're not bringing people in kind of at the bottom of the card and starting to build them up that way, that there seems to be no natural progression from like opening act to main event. It just, that process doesn't seem to be happening there. And I mean, I might seem like I'm being harsh here, because I think OTT is a really good promotion. I really enjoy watching it, but I'm thinking long-term, and long-term the picture is super show after super show. And Well, anyone could do that as long as they've got money. Is that
fair?
I think
the two promotions... I think the two promotions that get it right are WXW and ICW, the two promotions that mix their local talent with the super indie stuff better than anyone.
I think WXW's got it nailed down. They've been doing it for a long time, and they know exactly what they're doing, which is what allows them to put on these great super shows. But mixed into those super shows are talent that they've built themselves, like Jürgen Simmons or Axel Dieter. It's like they've built
the super shows don't feel like one-off super shows. They just feel like big shows for them. Yeah. And I would say that's the same thing for ICW, you know? I think they've done a very good job of retaining the personality of the local talent and the skills of a local talent with, like, major stars like Ricochet, and they don't look
ICW, they're true to their roots, and that's what makes them so popular in Scotland. I think their issues have stemmed from booking outdated storylines. Which, I mean, to be fair to them, the crowd have been into them, so it's who am I to turn around and say that they're bad storylines? I just don't think they're relevant to what is happening now in wrestling. I think they're a little bit behind.
It's definitely an interesting issue to bring up with OTT, and it's something maybe we can talk about more in later episodes.
We'll see how the cards go. I can see it being an issue for them going forwards, because every show they name talent for, it's like you look at the talent and think, well, who are they going to end up wrestling? Are they going to end up wrestling the local guys, or are they going to want to put on a really strong show and not do that? And that, I think, is the problem. Because in between, because they're quite a young promotion, you have to remember this, because they've not been around very long, and they've kind of gone straight from struggling to establish their own identity to these big shows all the time. They've kind of missed a step out in there somewhere, and that's where the problem has arisen. They haven't built their guys up enough. But hey, if wrestling was wrestling promotion was easy, everyone would do it.
So why we like to talk about it and analyze it.
Yes. So shall we move on to Fight Club Pro? We're going to talk a little bit about their Dream Tag Invitational. Do you want to run through the teams we've got for this?
I can indeed. We have Mustache Mountain, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven, FSU, Mark Andrews and Eddie Nurse, the Bruiser Cats, yes, Pete Dunne and Sammy Callahan. The Leaders, the Lucha Brothers, Phoenix, and Penta El Zero Muerto. Try saying that five times fast.
You can't say that at all.
Not as catchy as Pentagon, is it?
No, it's a little tricky.
And Angelico and Jack Evans.
Yes.
Plus two qualifiers, one from each of the next two shows.
I have no idea who those are going to be.
No idea. They haven't announced what those matches are going to be, so... A nice mix of huge stars, guys who've been around in Fight Club Pro forever, and also some mystery in there.
I do like the fact that the Bruiser Cats that's very much the definition of what they're going for here.
Yeah,
it's the guy that's been built up locally plus the big star import together, and that's one of the tag teams. It's like
just
that defines
just what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with the Midlands and Fight Club Pro, is that all those guys were the local guys, and now they're the big stars because they made their names for themselves there.
Yeah, they were just wrestling. Too good. So they've been fortunate in that respect, because there were no stars in the Midlands. I mean, we had Spud, Dave Mastiff. Well, he wasn't even Mastiff at the time. It would have been Dave Morales. But there really were no stars in the Midlands, and now there's tons. And this is largely because of Fight Club. Yeah, it's largely because of Fight Club Pro and what they've been doing.
And also in Fight Club Pro news, Nixon Newell, we've been talking for some time that she may be going somewhere. And
we know exactly where she's going. Do you know Casey Michael?
Yes.
He keeps track of like WWE's women's talent. And he posted up a picture at some point today, which had like, it was like a list of like faces of people who worked there, and Nixon York was on it. It just said like yet to report or something, like where she was.
Yeah, we don't have to remain coy about it.
No, she's going. Everyone knows she's going. It's been a very badly kept secret for. I try to think when I actually knew. I think I knew in November or October last year.
Mm.
As like a dead certain, and it's not like from talking to anyone, it was just widely known.
So we have her final two Fight Club Pro matches, which is sort of her home promotion as well as Attack, but again, Midlands wrestler, Nixon Newell. She's going up against her longtime rival, Chris Brooks. I think that'd be their third matchup in Fight Club Pro.
They set that up, incidentally, after the show that I went to. Because they had Nixon and Kaylee Ray against CCK.
I can't wait to see that match, by the way. I'm very hyped.
Incidentally, that was excellent. I'm not sure what I would rate it, but I'd probably have to watch it again for that. But yeah, excellent match. Phenomenally hot finish. And afterwards, they have Brooks... like hugs Nixon Newell as if to say, because she's been left alone in the ring at this point, and she's drinking a beer by herself, and the crowd are giving her a standing ovation because they know.
Yeah.
So then Brooks comes out, hugs her, and it's like the feud is finally over. It's like good luck in the future, kid. You know, all this business, and then he kicks her in the face because he's a prick. So that's how they set up the final match.
Yeah, and that's going to be crazy because I saw one of their matches in the Planet Nightclub where they just smashed each other with a bevy of items. and that was a lot of fun. And then her final match. Oh, sorry.
I saw the four-way match they had where it was Brooks, Nixon, Newell, Flash Morgan Webster, and Dan Maloney.
Yeah.
That was another match where they were pit against each other. But I'm...
And obviously they were tag partners in Vulture Squad.
Vulture Squad.
Those years ago.
So there's a lot of history there. A lot of history.
A lot of history. And that will all come to a head at Rise Against. And then at First Female of Fight Club, I wonder why it's called that. She'll be going up against Candice LeRae. And that will quite possibly be her final indie match.
It might be. She's due to report in April. That would be calendar. That would
I think
be
that's right at the end of March. So.
It's March the 18th. That show.
Okay.
So she might actually. Now that I'm looking at it, there's a progress show on the 26th.
Yeah, and she's still got the semi-final of Natch Progression to do. So
that might be her last one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, good to show Nixon Newell some love.
I do love Nixon.
The final month of her indie career. It's exciting and also a little bit sad.
It is. It's very sad. But then good luck to her in the future. Looking forward to seeing what she does in NXT. There is obviously a massive void there at the moment. The likes of her, Kimberly, Heidi Lovelace aiming to fill it. We'll see how they get along, but I think they're the next group of talent, along with Asuka, that's going to make an impact, because they can't keep running Charlotte and Bailey and Sasha
forever
and Becky
and
forever. It's there are spots to be had there.
And yeah,
I can see her filling one of them. She's good enough to do it. When they announced those matches, I decided on a whim to go and buy seats for both of the Fight Club Pro shows. So I'm getting no sleep at all that weekend. And that is, I've only just realised I'm going to be worked like a dog that week because the weekend before is Carrot. And I've also realised that I've double booked myself and I was supposed to be going to XWA in Colchester to see Kota Ibushi, and I can't because I'm going to be in Germany.
So if someone wants a Kota Ibushi ticket, then...
Yes, it is actually a front row. So
front row XWA if featuring
if Kota anybody Ibushi. Wants a front row ticket to XWA...
Before we turn this into eBay, shall we move on to WCPW World Cup lineups? We have four countries currently announced with their eight-man sub-tournaments or qualifying tournaments to get into the eight-man final tournament with a representative from all eight countries.
This is very exciting.
It's a loaded field and also a potentially volatile field in some instances. England should be nice and calm. We've got Zack Sabre Jr., Rampage Brown, Zach Gibson, Marty Scurll, Will Ospreay, Martin Kirby, Jimmy Havoc, and Nick Aldis. Are you hyped for Nick Aldis?
No. The other seven, however, I think are excellent. It really is a good field. I like that it's not your basic superstars of Brit Rest. They have kind of mixed it up a bit. Rampage obviously has been there since the beginning. He's a no-brainer. And Kirby, both no-brainers. They've been using Skrull and Ospreay a lot. Sabre Jr., obviously top talent. Havoc, kind of synonymous with the British scene over the last like 3-4 years. Gibson, heat machine that he is. Aldis, I guess, if you're going to try and make it different, then you have to reach out and pull in somebody that is kind of a name from TV, but attainable. And yeah, Magnus is attainable. He's not a very good wrestler, though.
Better gladiator. So Scotland... which I believe is happening on the same week as England. I think England's on the 21st of March and Scotland on the 23rd.
Scotland taking place in SWA, Scottish Wrestling Association. the promoter of that promotion once rang me while I was at work and kept me on the phone for 2 hours. That's a true story.
So you're not a fan?
I am. I like SWA. Conscience is a lovely man. Although he's nowhere... He is billed as, I can't, 6 foot something. He is not. That's a lie. That's a filthy, filthy lie. He knows where I live. I'm in trouble now. Carry on.
So, Scotland lineups. We have Drew Galloway, Joe and Mark Coffey, Kenny Williams, Joe Hendry, BT Gunn, Lewis Girvin, and Liam Thompson. It's sort of a best of ICW, I guess.
It is, yeah. It's very ICW lineup. There's some good talent in there. Hendry obviously has worked a lot for them, as has Galloway, as has Joe and Mark Coffey for that matter. Nice to see Kenny Williams in there and BT Gunn. I think they'll do well.
Mexico, this is when it gets really interesting.
This is insane. This is taking place, by the way, in Coventry.
Yeah, the home of Lucha.
The home of Lucha Libre, Coventry.
We have Rey Mysterio, Alberto El Patron, Caristico, who was the original Sin Cara, Penta, whatever, Phoenix, Drago, El Hijo Dos Caras, and El Ligero, because he is Mexican.
He is Mexican. I thought it was hilarious that they put Ligero in there. I think
you had to.
Of all the what culture gags, I think that is probably the best that they've come up with so far.
Hilarious. We're going to have Sin Cara and Alberto Del Rio in the same bracket. That'll be interesting. and also a whole gaggle of CMLL and AAA guys, and they are not exactly the best of friends either.
Not usually.
I'm wondering, and of course, Phoenix and Penta left AAA, so... I'm not sure how much Drago thinks of them now.
It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. The thing with Lucha Libre is there's that fiery Latin temperament and people get annoyed with each other like violently, so that could be interesting.
So yeah, odds on a shoot fight breaking out.
I'm fired up to see Ligero beating everyone there.
Yeah, Ligero's got the most reason to be pissed off.
Go on, Sai.
And Germany, we got an interesting mix. We got Axel Dieter Jr. and Bad Bones, the famous guys. And then we got a whole bunch of interesting named people. We have Juvenile X, Lucky Kid, Tarkan Aslan.
I'm going to be laughing more and more as this goes on because the names get sillier and sillier.
Pascal Spalter, Cash Money Urkan.
Cash Money Urkan.
And Crazy Sexy,
Sexy Mike.
Mike. This is a hell of a lineup.
My God.
Where Cash did they find Urkan. These people?
Germany, somewhere.
The deepest, darkest regions of Germany.
Several of those
Cash
gentlemen.
Cash Money Urkan.
Alan Forel is not heard of. yeah. That's probably not the strongest of lineups that they've got, but I'm always interested to see new wrestlers. So
yeah.
there are six people there, two of them with really silly names. Maybe three if you include Pascal.
Ooh, I think all of their names are a bit silly.
yes, a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what they're like. And thank you to WCPW for enlightening me into the world of German wrestling beyond WXW.
And then there are also going to be rounds in Canada, USA, Japan, and the rest of the world.
That Japanese one interests me intensely. I am really, really interested in that for two reasons. One, I want to know who they're getting because whoever it is going to the finals. So if it's somebody that I would never in a million years see in any other circumstances, then that might be the difference between me going and not going to the finals. Because if it is like, I don't even want to pull a name out of a hat, but like Kento Miyahara, for example, like I'm never going to see that guy ever unless he happens to be booked in this tournament. Also though, like whoever's in it is basically completely off the WWE's radar. Because there's no way they're going to sign up for that when WWE is prospecting a possible Asian tournament.
Yes, which WWE is Japan.
They're intending on doing that, I think, this year.
The world domination hand looms over Japan.
Yeah, so anyone that agrees to be in this tournament is basically WWE don't want them.
We'll see what happens. We only know that Canada is going to be run by Smash Wrestling.
Smash Wrestling,
and
yeah.
The other three we have no idea about. I assume the rest of the world will be the Travis Banks of the world, and that'll be very much WCPW. But USA and Japan, we've heard nothing about what the organization of that is going to be.
I can
so
only assume
be interesting.
That negotiations are underway. If they manage to get like a WCPW show in Corican Hall, that'd be something. Can you imagine that?
I could never have predicted if that did happen.
I mean, we keep saying, look, there's nothing that can surprise me anymore in wrestling. But if WCPW ran Corican Hall in 2017, but I mean, really, what the fuck? What the fuck is happening? What is going on?
It would be mad. It would be mad.
But this is not that's not speculation.
It's not far
just
out.
Just genuinely
reach.
Possible. Jesus Christ. Okay, where do we go from there? That was completely insane.
Are you suitably sourced enough to talk Lucha Forever?
Yeah, go on then.
So, I mean, I'll let you take the lead on this because you clearly have something to say, do you?
Who in their right mind runs a Mr. and Mrs. tag team tournament?
Two wrestlers with girlfriends who like to advertise that they have girlfriends.
I have to control myself here. Lucha Forever. so it's Will Ospreay and Ryan Smile. And yeah, Ryan Smile at the, I went to the Work and Arrest Hold podcast down in London, and he was on that. And he seemed upset that people knew that Lucha Forever was him, and it's like, dude, everyone knows it's you.
How could you not know?
Literally,
at this point
everybody
and Ryan Smile.
Everybody in the room knows it's you. Just so that in itself, I thought was just ridiculous. Ryan Smile sometimes does strike me as being a completely ridiculous individual. So some of the cards that they've put together, though, I'm going to have to give them their credit. And like I said earlier with OTT, you'd have to be, well, frankly, stupid to not be able to put on a show in the UK with the talent that's available and just turn it into a supercard, because there's so much talent available. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at some of their cards. I'm now going to have to look at their card because I can't remember who's on it. Because it was, I just looked at it and it was like, it's a supercard. You know, can you hear the sound of my scrolling down there?
Yeah.
I got, Pete Dunne versus Ricochet, Shane Strickland versus Travis Banks, which Fight Club Pro did, great match. Will Ospreay versus Sami Callihan, which I don't think I've ever seen, so that should be good. Alex Windsor versus Tony Storm, girlfriend. And I think that's CCK and Damian Dunn against El Ligero. I can't see who the guy on the back row is. It looks like one of the Hunters. And B. Priestley. Girlfriend. So, it kind of looks like a fun show that they've got going on there. But, the whole Mr. and Mrs. Tag Team Tournament is just...
I think it's 8 teams, right? It's not 16, because they couldn't be enough to say 16.
Was it 16 at the start and they decided they couldn't find that many?
Because you could do that with 8. You could definitely do that with 8. I mean, they've got 2, and they can give, they can call up Ricochet and Tesla.
Who else is in it?
Stevie, I just don't understand why anyone would be interested in such a concept. It's very self-serving. I'll leave it at that.
it's over 3 nights. That I hate to tell you, there actually are 16
teams. Where are you going to fight?
are there
16 wrestling couples?
I don't know. But it's... I guess some of them are going to be worked. But
yeah,
it's... basically, it's taking place over the... This is really confusing to me because it's the 27th, 28th, and 29th of June, which is midweek. I don't really understand that.
It's weird.
I do a yearly pub crawl on the 28th of June, so I might just go to... It's in Birmingham, so I might end up going to the one on the 29th in some kind of drunken slash hangover state to just watch anyway. So I may end up going to the finals just because. Wrestling. Yeah, it's weird. I don't like it. It's weird. And the other shows that they put on, they did say something about a ladder match, which was like a 4-way ladder match with Pete Dunne and Ospreay and people that look really great, but I think that the whole concept of the Mr. and Mrs. Tag Team Tournament has kind of put me off them a bit.
I mean, it's just weird that they've never run a show, but they're selling all this merch and like advertising shows for 4 months.
There's loads of shows as well.
It's an odd promotion, but like, we'll give it the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's going to be really awesome. It's been strangely hyped so far.
Well, the one match that I have seen where they've done like a Mr. and Mrs. Tag was in WCPW, where they did Ospreay and B against Ricochet and Tessa.
Yeah.
And that was great. So if the whole thing's that good,
is it sustainable
then...
over three nights?
No, I don't think it is, but... I don't know. It's in June anyway, so tickets are on sale on Lucha Forever's website.
Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, maybe it'll be good. I don't know. Did you have any takes, or are we just kind of like throwing me in front of the bus and seeing what happens there?
Well, I've sort of given my takes. I find it odd that they're selling merch for a promotion that hasn't even had run a show yet, and like advertising like free shows in advance. And yeah, the Mr. and Mrs. thing, I don't think anyone is looking at that in a positive way, let's say. And I find, like,
if
you're gonna do that, make it like a little tournament, not a 16 team tournament.
Yeah, like a one nighter maybe.
Yeah.
The equivalent of like the going around the water cooler at work in Britress is kind of hanging around the ring at Fight Club Pro, and everyone that I spoke to there about it was just, there was a lot of eye rolling, shall we say. So there is one final topic before we leave, which has got to be quite soon, because I think we're going quite long here. Zack Sabre Jr. is going to be in New Japan.
A bit. This is great news. And a lot of permutations to it as well. They're doing it on the 45th anniversary show. So they're really loading up this anniversary show, lots of title matches. And yeah, the debut of Zack Sabre Jr. versus Katsuyori Shibata for the British Heavyweight Championship. Their third match for the belt. Do you see Sabre Jr. coming in and winning it straight off of that?
This has kind of confused me, because I assumed they were going to put it back on Sabre but do it in the UK. If they did that in Japan, that would be a huge move. Unless they've agreed a long-term contract with him, I would be very surprised if that happened.
I could definitely see it happening. They tend to do this. They tend to bring guys in and have them win the titles on the first night. Think RPG Vice with the junior tag titles, and
Shibata is a guy they're very specifically looking at pushing.
Yes.
And this is not really a title that matters so much.
But at the same time, do you want to have him hold this, let's face it, tertiary title in the grand scheme of things, while he's getting pushed up the card? I feel like drop it now, put Sabre over big time, and you can build him up, beat Suzuki, win the G1, etc., etc., and then this will be a distant memory.
It kind of makes sense, I guess, but at the same time, I do want Shibata to keep coming back. It's just how long. I think they need to talk. I think New Japan and RevPro need to sit down and talk about it and go, like, well, where are we going with this? Like, how long is it going to go on for? I'd be quite happy for him to hold the title for a long time until New Japan are ready to do something with him, because at the moment, you just don't know, do you? It could be this year. It might be next year. Who knows?
Yeah. I think possibly Sabre could win it. Possibly Shibata could win it and then drop it to Suzuki, and then Sabre wins it from Suzuki and gets the match he never got in Noah. We know he wants that match, so
that'd
maybe
he
can.
Does that mean if they sent like Misu over to the UK with it, that would be something.
That would be something.
And he has been over here, like, in the last 6 months, but...
But Suzuki and York Hall is a completely different being.
To be honest, I'm not a big fan of York Hall.
Ooh.
I'm not. It's like if you're not sat in the front two rows, say four rows, you're probably not going to get a very good view unless you stood up. And the atmosphere is weird.
I don't know. I've always really enjoyed the atmosphere. I wasn't at High Stakes when everyone was saying the atmosphere
was weirdest.
I've never seen the atmosphere as weird, but obviously High Stakes got a lot of weirdness, clearly.
Yeah. Plus, I have that... before we started recording, I was talking about children and how annoyed I was with them. This wasn't with you, it was with like with Ian and Akhil in the like the Rear View Reviews like private chat thing. And I was just kind of banging on about this show in your call where I was sat next to a child and he spent the whole of the show just complaining that he couldn't see and what's going on? I can't see. And I just spent 3 hours sat there knowing that I couldn't swear.
And it well, just, everyone hates children. You can't blame your call on children.
I think I may have to just do balcony from now on. Balcony means you can stand wherever you want and do whatever you want. It's like a rule unto itself. I think that's
standing is the best way to watch a wrestling show. I think we've determined that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, I had one more point on the British heavyweight title, and that is that New Japan have booked this better than the Ring of Honor title and treated it like a more important
they
title.
They really have, haven't they?
Like, they clearly like RevPro a lot more than Ring of Honor. I know they're doing the Honor Rising tour, but it's hardly like an amazing like lineup of Ring of Honor meets New Japan. It's kind of just a couple of Korakuen shows with Ring of Honor guys on it. But they're treating this belt pretty seriously. Obviously, it's not high up on the hierarchy, but Shibata, always carrying it around, and they're putting on title matches with British guys, making it seem like a big deal for them.
There's a good chance that the Japanese guys have just really enjoyed working with the British guys and have enjoyed working for RevPro. So what comes from that is that they just want to carry on working with them in tours and in New Japan itself, which it's not unfeasible to think that you could see RevPro send over a tour. It probably wouldn't be like Fantastica Mania or anything, but it would be more in line with what Ring of Honor does now, which is just send over a bunch of guys and have them interact. And that's not inconceivable that would happen this year. So this is the year. This is crazy.
This is the year that Britress invades Japan, according to your predictions.
And they're not like completely out there left wing, like crazy predictions. It's just this is something that might actually happen.
Yeah.
Love the wrestling, man. Love it.
Love the wrestling.
Yeah, so I think that's it for this week because we've been talking for like way over an hour and a half now.
Yeah.
It's getting out of control. There's been a lot of rambling, but there's been a lot of fun. So it's all good. Do you have anything to plug before we head out?
You can find me on Twitter at AnotherOlly. Read my F4W Euro notes every week in the F4W newsletter. And British Audio Wrestling and Live Audio Wrestling. It's a podcast, just like this one, but a bit different.
I did another podcast, as I said I would. It actually dropped the same day as the Hebrew Restaurant Table last week, which is kind of funny. It was me and Stu from the Indie Corner. It's just a couple of old guys talking about old-timey wrestling and stuff. It's going to be weird and different. I don't really know where I'm going with it yet, but keep checking out the Indie Corner .com for that. My own website, rearviewreviews.com. Feel free to click on the Amazon link while you're there if you're in the UK. If you're not in the UK, you're over in the States, or I'm not sure what other countries it works in. But if you're American and you're listening to this, go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and use that link. That helps with the running of the site and so on and so forth. And on that note, you can also catch me at Arnold Furious on Twitter.
And also, Oberhausen.
Oh, yeah. In the excitement, I almost forgot. Yes, we're going to Oberhausen. It's going to be fun.
Quite exciting. We'll see you there if you're going.
Yeah, if you're going to Oberhausen, drop one of us a message and we'll see you there. We're aware that there's loads of like Brit Rest guys going. I actually spoke to Strigger the other day And he said that he thinks this is the largest collection of like British like slash Irish people that have ever gone to a German wrestling show ever. So it's fun. It's fun times. On that note, I think we should probably check out, and we'll be dropping in next time with what we're doing next time.
16 Carat.
Well, we've got in between then, there is a WXW show called Dead End. So we'll be looking at that. We'll probably do the Progress show as well, which is end of the month. And we'll be all hyped up for 16 Carat. And on that note, we're out of here. So good evening.
Goodbye.